Welcome to the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network.
And good evening, John Jeffers here on the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network. We've got some changes coming up to CRN. They're not ready to be publicized, but well started off this evening. We kicked it off. We'll see how it works out and how it goes. And when things are set, of course, I will naturally inform you, my listeners. Why? Because you deserve it. You spend your time. Some of you actually donate to the show to help support us, and you definitely deserve to know what's going on and how it's going to happen. All right. So, let me think here. Tonight is going to be for Patriots. Now, again, just because it's for Patriots doesn't mean that preppers can't listen. Oftentimes, as I've said, Patriots and preppers are subcultures of our society as it is, and many times they do overlap. There are a few differences in their philosophies, but they're minor differences most of the time. So tonight, because while everybody else is focused on, you know, oohing and aahing about the North Koreans releasing three American citizens and why they were in North Korea, I'll have no idea. Whoever thought that was a good idea should be slapped silly as soon as those men get off the plane tonight. So if their families are at Andrews Air Force Base, or do they say Joint Base Andrews, I would say this. Whoever said it was a good idea for them to go to North Korea, they should walk up to those people and slap the shit out of them right there in front of God and everyone else on national television. Who in their right mind would think going to North Korea was a good idea? Yeah. All right. But anyways, for tonight's episode, I want to talk. There's still some things, because like I said, while everybody else is oohing and aahing about the North Koreans releasing three American citizens, I've been following up on what's going on with the biggest scandal ever in American history. It's not even a scandal is the wrong word. How about the biggest abuse of power leading to an attempted coup d'etat here in the United States by a handful of people who could not accept the American people's choice for president of the United States in the general election in 2016. But I'm going to keep on it. I want you to be informed because you need to know these things. If you've been following, we've talked before about how Mueller and company have picked up on the Ron Michael Cohn. Yes, there was a Michael Cohn that went to Prague. Unfortunately, there's more than one person named Michael Cohn in the United States. And the Cohn that they thought they had is the wrong one. Nice job, boneheads. But let's put something straight. This goofy Stormy Daniels thing, that happened 10 years ago, and who cares if Trump paid her hush money? I don't care. Was it paid out of campaign contributions? Therefore, it's no problem. It doesn't matter. I didn't choose Donald Trump because, you know, that he may or may not have had a sinless past. They chose him because he's the man that said he's going to get things done, and he promised he would, and he has. But as we all know, the mainstream media is just focused once again on the wrong side of history, and they will continue to be because they're a bunch of boneheads. But let's get this going. Of course, Sundance has put this out there, and you need to hear it, and I'm going to tell it to you. And when you hear it, and you think about it, you're going to get even crazier and pissed off more than you already are. So Michael Avenatti is the sketchy lawyer for porn star Stormy Daniels. following a similar approach deployed by the Fusion GPS. In a rush to spread rumors and accusations, Avenatti has pushed stolen documents from the Treasury Department filings to his allies in the media. Now, the documents appear to come from frequently submitted bank filings and Treasury notifications known as currency transaction reports, otherwise known as CTRs, and suspicious activity reports, SARs. SARs and CTRs are compliance forms filed by organizations who engage in financial services. Every organization, from mortgage providers to international financial institutions, to local U.S. Main Street banks, all the way to Western Union and convenience stores who generate money orders, are required to file CTRs and SARs as part of the Treasury Department's Banking Secretaries Act, a law requiring anyone engaged in financial services to assist government agencies in detecting and preventing money laundering. At some point, every person has probably likely had a report filled out by a financial provider submitting their details within a financial transaction filed with the Treasury Department. You never know about it because it's part of compliance reporting. Somehow, the sketchy lawyer from Stormy Daniels obtained a list of Treasury filings attached to the name Michael Cohen, the same name as President Trump's lawyer. It is likely someone within the Treasury Department or the DOJ with search access to the Treasury Department leaked this list to Michael Avenatti in an effort to assist his dubious motives. When they find who this person is, they need to be prosecuted. Unfortunately, at least two of the people Avenatti is now accusing of scurrilous financial transactions are not the same Michael Cohen the dubious lawyer is seeking to attack. One is a Canadian Michael Cohen. The other is an Israeli Michael Cohen. Both have financial transactions in the United States. The latter just sending his brother money. Now, this is what happens when you put names in the search engines within government records. There are always multiple people with the same name. You might remember the wrong Michael Cohen was identified in the Steele dossier as traveling to Prague, part of a similarly intended and motivated accusation. The previous incorrect search result on Cohen travel contained in the Clinton-Steele dossier likely came from unlawful FISA 702, paragraph 17. That's an about query or opposition research, and was passed along from Fusion GPS to Steele, laundered into an intelligence product, and later passed back to the FBI via the dirty dossier. Today's incorrect search results likely came from a U.S. government agency with access to Treasury Department records. The U.S. Treasury Department has now opened an internal Inspector General investigation to see if they can find out who accessed the records, conducted an unauthorized search under the search name Michael Cohen, and unlawfully passed the results to the porn star's lawyer, Michael Avenatti. Now, in Washington, the Treasury Department's Inspector General is investigating whether confidential banking information related to a company controlled by President Trump's personal attorney, Michael Cohen, may have been leaked, a spokesman said. Rich Delmar, counsel to the Inspector General, said that in response to media reports, the office is inquiring into allegations that suspicious activity reports on Cohen's banking transactions were improperly disseminated. Now, detailed claims about Cohen's banking history were made public Tuesday by Michael Avenatti, an attorney for Stormy Daniels, the adult film star who was paid $130,000 by Cohen shortly before the 2016 election to keep quiet about her alleged affair with Trump. Now, on Twitter, Avenatti circulated a dossier that purports to show that Cohen was hired last year by the U.S.-based affiliate of a Russian company owned by Viktor Vekselberg. A Russian business magnate who attended Trump's inauguration and was recently subjected to sanctions by the U.S. government. The affiliate New York investment firm Columbus Nova confirmed the payment, saying it was for consulting on investments and other matters, but denied any involvement by Vekselberg. Now, as most people are now aware, there are employees and contractors within the U.S. government now weaponizing their access to personnel records in an effort to attack their political opposition. This should not be a surprise. President Obama unlocked the door to weaponizing government against ordinary citizens when his Attorney General Eric Holder and the Treasury Department via the IRS gathered a list of U.S. persons who donated to Tea Party groups. If you remember, Ms. Lois Lerner, an IRS administrator with access to IRS records of groups who filed under the 501c3 and 4, passed to the DOJ over 1 million names from the Schedule B filings of those groups. The filings were contained in 21 CD-ROMs the IRS gave to Attorney General Eric Holder to generate the admitted secret research project. The people and companies listed as contributing to Tea Party groups are then targeted by additional government agencies. The IRS admitted to what took place, and a class action lawsuit was quietly settled. However, in doing this, a Pandora's box was opened. The Obama approach of using government database to research political opposition never stopped. A similar outcome was later evidenced in the FISA 702, 16, and 17 admissions by the FBI and Department of Justice, National Security Division in 2016. Now, agents, employees, private contractors, and entities within government agencies with political motives and agendas have the ability to weaponize information against people they consider their political opposition. This was always the danger of allowing corrupt left-wing ideologues to have the ability to control the mechanics of government. This is part of Obama's fundamental change that people allowed in 2009 through 2017. After 8 years of access and promotion of the processes, there are now thousands of like-minded political ideologues within government that will abuse their access to data in an effort to assist their allies. Leaking information has evolved in specific targeting as the process has become more refined and frequent. The discovered conversations between Page and Strzok and Communications Director Michael Cortan leaking information to their allies in the media is simply an extension of this continued approach. The connective tissue between the media who receive information and the political legal groups who use the information is becoming less and less opaque each day. Now, we see this relationship between the Clinton, DNC, Fusion, GPS, the intelligence apparatus, and the media. They were or working in common cause. We see this in names like Daniel Richmond, the friend of FBI Director James Comey, who received the Comey memos, a friend who was granted access to the FBI database. We also see this in names like Benjamin Witz, the operator of Lawfare blog, a group of like-minded allies, also friends of James Comey. We see evidence of this weaponization and ideological alignment with the FBI Chief Legal Counsel James Baker going to work for Lawfare blog. Corrupt government officials, corrupt intelligence officials, corrupt media officials, corrupt legal officials, corrupt political officials, all connected as part of one larger apparatus known as the deep state with one ideological and political intent. The use of the weaponized information by a porn star lawyer is a corrupt continuance, nothing more. Think about it. Think about it. Unbelievable, isn't it? I can't even stand it. I can't. I just can't stand it. Why? How much longer does this have to go on? I don't know. All right. Also, a curious note. Robert Mueller interviewed NSA Mike Rogers immediately prior to Rosensnake renewing the third FISA extension. As you've heard me say before, Admiral Rogers is the one man who probably stopped a constitutional crisis in this country. Throughout 2015 and until April 28th, 2016, there were unknown, outside government contractors with access to the FBI NSA database. Those outside government agents were conducting unlawful searches of the FISA database. The 99-page FISA court opinion by Presiding Justice Rosemary Collyer proves this with absolute certainty. CTH, Conservative Treehouse, has long suspected those outside agents were doing political opposition research and were allowed to do so as part of the political misuse of the intelligence apparatus. For example, on page 83, quote, FBI gave Raw Section 702, that's acquired information to a private entity that was not a federal agency and whose personnel were not sufficiently supervised by a federal agency for compliance minimization procedures. That's part of the 2017 FISA court opinion. It's a 99-page brief. With the revelation of Daniel Richmond, a close friend of James Comey, being a, you know, special access employee of the FBI, hired by Comey, CTH anticipates Richmond will be discovered as one of those previously described outside government unpaid contractors with access to the FISA database. The new information of Richmond, along with what we know of Fusion GPS, is an example of the hidden connective tissue between the lawfare group, outside government, and the small group of DOJ and FBI officials inside government. NSA Director Admiral Mike Rogers ordered a FISA 702 audit and shut down the contractor access to FISA 702, 16, and 17. Remember, FISA 702, 16, those are called to-from queries. Person went here to there. The 17, a FISA 702, 17 query is an about query. They want to know about this person, where they travel, that kind of thing. So he shut down the access to the FISA 702 systems on April 20th, 2016. Those contractors, together with their inside allies doing opposition research, moved to make the unofficial use of the database official. So toward this end, Fusion GPS, an FBI contractor, hired Nellie Orr, who is wife of the DOJ deputy Bruce Orr, in May 2016. And by July 2016, the collective group of insiders and outsiders had assembled enough sketchy data points or information to frame the outline needed for an official investigation. This is the origin of the July 2016 FBI counterintelligence operation. The left-wing alliance doing the work, insiders and outsiders contributing, was successful in morphing opposition research into an official FBI counterintelligence operation. That began at the same time as the GOP convention in July 2016. This is a broad stroke outline, demonstrably provable through exhaustive research. Now, a year later, sometime in late June of 2017, a month after the appointment of Robert Mueller, the special counsel met with Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats and NSA Director Admiral Mike Rogers. The New York Times cited the meeting in an article posted on June 14, 2017, in which they say Mr. Mueller wants to question Dan Coats, the Director of National Intelligence, Admiral Michael S. Rogers, the head of National Security Agency, and Richard Ledgett, the former NSA Deputy Director. Remember, DNI Dan Coats and NSA Mike Rogers were working together in March and April of 2017. It was thanks to Dan Coats we have access to the critical declassified FISA report, which is what Judge Rosemary Collier wrote in April of 2017. Coats declassified the content, albeit with redactions. It is from this release of information that much is learned in 2017. Now, depending on who is questioning, and considering that these are apex intelligence members who would be interviewed by only senior members of the special counsel, likely Robert Mueller himself, and considering Robert Mueller was one of the key architects of the FISA court post 9/11, there is almost no way Dan Coats and Mike Rogers would not inform Mueller of the DOJ and FBI FISA issues and the political corruption therein. Basically, Coats and Rogers told Mueller what was going on, and yet nothing was done. And now Mueller wants to interview him. Oh, good God, does it ever end with these people? This conversation between Coats, Rogers, and Mueller is likely around the end of June or the beginning of July 2017. Now consider and overlay this. One of the most frequent questions about Assistant Attorney General Rod Rosensnake circles around his decision to reauthorize the FISA Title I surveillance warrant used against Carter Page, and by extension, the Trump campaign, In this outline, we take the timeline and overlay new information that helps to understand what was going on. Why did Rosensnake renew that sketchy FISA warrant July 18, 2017? And why did Mueller request clarity 2 weeks later on August 2, 2017? To understand the dynamic, we must remind ourselves what was known at key dates in the investigative decision-making. None of this is intended to exhibit an opinion toward the motives of those making decisions. However, in hindsight, we can clearly outline what was known, what was not known at the time these decisions were made. Recently, we have gained clarity toward the scope of the investigative evidence held by Robert Mueller, thanks to some debriefing interviews by witness Michael Caputo. We more thoroughly understand what evidence is held by Robert Mueller, and more importantly, the scale that evidence leads to a reasonable conclusion about how it was obtained. Now, it appears Special Counsel Mueller began his investigation of Russian interference and the possibility of Trump campaign collusion right where the FBI counterintelligence operation left off. This is additionally supported by reviewing the original investigative instructions as outlined by Rod Rosenstein the day Mueller was appointed a special counsel. The key phrase here is to serve as special counsel to oversee the previously confirmed FBI investigation of Russian government efforts to influence the 2016 presidential election. That's a quote. Now here, Rosensnake is clearly instructing Mueller to pick up the former counterintelligence investigation previously headed by FBI Assistant Director of Counterintelligence Bill Priestap and his number two FBI agent Peter Strzok. Now the date of this appointment is May 17, 2017, approximately a week after President Trump fired Comey on May 9th. So there we have the three areas of direct authority. Links or coordination between the Russian government and the campaign of Donald Trump, matters that may arise from the investigation of Russian government and the campaign of Donald Trump, and three other matters within the scope of the 28 CFR statute 600.4A. That's jurisdiction, in other words. So there's the instructions to Robert Mueller and his team on May 17, 2017. As an outcome of this May 2017 reassignment of investigative authority, Mueller now takes over from Bill Priestap. The special counsel takes over the investigation from the FBI. The lead investigator is Peter Strzok, is in immediate communication with Robert Mueller's point person, Aaron Zellbe, via email. And FBI agent Peter Strzok eventually finds himself part of the special counsel investigative team. Now, it's important to remember, at the time all this is taking place, no one inside the DOJ Inspector General's office or the Internal Investigation Division of the FBI is aware of the evidence that FBI agent Peter Strzok and DOJ assigned Special Counsel Lisa Page have been part of a group shaping a months-long insurance policy against the candidacy and presidency of Donald Trump. Nor is anyone aware that Andrew McCabe, Michael Cortan, Lisa Page, and Peter Strzok are leaking frequently to their media allies. These discoveries come later. So in May of 2017, Mueller and Rosensnake would not know the history of what activity was happening inside the FBI small group scheme. However, they would likely know the FISA abuse in 2016 as outlined by Director Mike Rogers. NSA Director Mike Rogers. It was 10 months before the special counsel was assigned when Page and Strzok were messaging each other about the insurance policy discussed in Andrew McCabe's office. The Page-Strzok messages were on August 18, 2016. Now, that insurance policy is widely believed to have been shorthand to describe an effort to conduct surveillance on candidate Trump, which could later ensure a strategic plan to disrupt and possibly eliminate Trump if elected via the Russian collusion narrative. That plan needed legal FBI authority to conduct surveillance, which could be used to weaponize intelligence. That plan culminated in the Carter Page Title I FISA warrant as the deployment mechanism on October 21, 2016. Apparently, without knowledge of the underlying sketchy context inside the application, which is the Steele dossier of the FISA Title I surveillance warrant on July 18, 2017, Assistant Rosensnake renews the FISA warrant as the third continuance of an investigative tool, this time to be used by Robert Mueller. And with intensely broad and intrusive surveillance authority, Mueller's investigative unit now has the legal authority to capture the records of everyone within two hops of Carter Page, and that includes the entire Trump campaign and likely almost all the Trump administration. This explains why Michael Caputo said, quote, Mueller has everything on every person related to the campaign, including calls, emails, text messages, the works. However, between the start of the Mueller special counsel in May and the day of the FISA renewal on July 18th, the OIG and the internal inspectors, investigators began to discover issues as a result of an internal leak investigation. That's the OIG report on McCabe. Questions to the FBI communication director Mike Cortan, Andrew McCabe, and his lawyer Lisa Page resulted in contradictions within their statements. For example, in May of 2017, McCabe denies leaking the Wall Street Journal story to the FBI. In July of 2017, McCabe denies again. This time he denies it to the Inspector General Horowitz, the Inspector General, not his investigators, the man. In July 20th, 2017, Horowitz gets struck Page text messages proving McCabe constructed the Wall Street Journal story and lied to FBI investigators and Inspector General. So immediately after Rosensnake reauthorizes the FISA warrant on July 18th, 2017, Lisa Page turns over text messages to support her version of events. The OIG and internal affairs investigators get the Page struck messages on July 20th, 2017. Now things get interesting. I know, it's been long, just stay with me. As a result of those messages delivered July 20th, soon thereafter, the IG informs Robert Mueller there are big issues with Page and Strzok, who were or both on the special counsel team. Obviously, internal affairs and the Inspector General investigators are pouring through the messages. As a result of the IG notification, Robert Mueller removes Strzok. It is reported that Lisa Page left a few weeks before. Now, in the Appendix C, we discover the final text from Lisa Page to Strzok took place on June 25th, 2017, with her quote-unquote, don't ever text me again. This final message follows Strzok's heavily redacted text message June 22nd about not being able to reach out. So we can assume with reasonable accuracy, Lisa Page was a non-factor in the Robert Mueller investigation around late June, and Peter Strzok is removed sometime shortly after Mueller gets the details about their compromise late July, beginning of August. It is likely Rosensnake is informed of the same issue soon after he reauthorized the FISA warrant on July 18th. Now, prior to that initial IG notification and prior to the Office of the Inspector General and FBI Inspection Division review of the scale of the issue, no one outside the small group knew about the scheme or the insurance policy. However, at the beginning of August 2017, both Rosensnake and Mueller now have some idea something is seriously wrong within the prior corrupt FBI investigation that was using the FISA Title I surveillance warrant Rosensnake just renewed 2 weeks earlier. So what happened next? So now we look at the date of the newest special counsel instructions, which would be August 2, 2017. In hindsight, it is now clear why Robert Mueller would be reaching out to Rosensnake and telling the Assistant Attorney General that, against the revelations of what the prior FBI investigative unit was doing, and with Mueller having interviewed Mike Rogers earlier, Rosensnake better provided Mueller increased clarity as to the specifics of what he is authorized to review. So by the end of July 2017, the released investigative evidence is clear. Both Rosensnake and Mueller both become aware of the initial issues with Page and Strzok, and likely how those issues were critically escalating as the IG and internal affairs discover through reviews of evidence and in-person interviews the outline of a broad conspiracy. It's no surprise that Mueller takes pause and requests clear instructions in writing, but we still don't know what's behind that massive redaction. The summary is this. An honest review. Now, look, if you've been following this stuff on Dobbs Tonight and on Hannity, when you hear them talk about the scope memo, this is what they're talking about. So in summary, an honest review of the timeline shows the third FISA renewal happened right before Rosenstein and Mueller became aware of the first signs of the corruption. Additionally, a clear hindsight review of the content within the application vis-a-vis the fraudulent use of the Clinton-Steele dossier showed a clear reason why it was never reauthorized again, and easily why Carter Page was never charged with anything. Now, once the IG and internal affairs investigators had the time to go deeper into the internal investigation, this is around the point when Utah federal prosecutor John Huber is brought into the findings surfacing within the IG and internal affairs investigation. Now, Huber's task, likely to review all the discoveries for potentially criminal conduct, grand jury evidence, and possible criminal indictments, if warranted. However, all that said, none of this explains why Rosenstein did not shut down the special counsel investigation in around September or October of 2017, as soon as the scale of internal corruption was known. Unless the extraneous Flynn, Papadopoulos, and Manafort findings, some of which likely stemmed from the use of the FISA extensions in the period from May through October, became the agenda for continuance. So here's where everyone wants to know the motives behind Mueller, Rosenstein, and the corresponding investigators. Truthfully, this is where an argument could be made in both directions, so decide for yourself. I know, so that was a little long, but now you get an idea of, you know, what's really happening here. All right, we got time for, this one's kind of important too. How many of you know of artist John McNaughton? You've probably seen his stuff, you just don't know you've seen it. McNaughton uses his incredible talents to outline the frustration felt by many. In his latest artwork titled Expose the Truth, McNaughton highlights the frustration of a presidency and the efforts of Robert Mueller. He says, "There has been a crusade in this country led by a group that wishes to overturn the election and impeach President Trump. Robert Mueller leads a special counsel of at least 17 partisan Democratic attorneys who have yet to find a single piece of evidence against the president, yet they ignore the mounting, verifiable evidence against Russian collusion with the DNC and the Clinton Foundation. The political bias and negligence of those who have led the Department of Justice and the FBI is forthcoming. There comes a time when you have to take a stand. Expose the truth." And so his new painting, Expose the Truth, I think it's time Trump fired these clowns and flipped the investigation on them. Well, the time's coming for that, my friend. You've seen it. John McNaughton. Look him up. JONMC NAUGHTON. All right. I know we're just a little bit past our half-hour mark here on the Jeffers Brief. So we're going to end it now. We're only 2 minutes over. But just the same, I wanted you to get an idea of what was going on. Well, everybody else is going gaga about the North Koreans. Not this guy. Not this show. Not this podcast. We're still keeping our eye on the ball. Oh, and if you're wondering about Judge Ellis, who told Mueller's investigators in court, he wants to see that scope memo immediately. And their big thing about, well, it's, you know, need a security clearance and all that. Hey, morons, note for you, Judge Ellis is on the FISA court. He has top security clearance. He can see whatever he wants to. So Mueller's investigators and lawyers are scrambling, trying to figure out what to do next. And they don't dare go to Rosenstein. If they communicate with Rosenstein, it'll be exposed. I love it. They're starting to eat each other. They're starting to flip out. I love it. We're coming unhinged. I love it. I love it. I love it. All right. This is Joe Jeffers here on the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network, my proper and patriot friends. Be safe, be alert, and be vigilant. Good night.